episode 193, recorded January 13th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquariumaxers.
Hello. We are back yet again for another fun-filled episode of Aquatic Wisdom.
You just made that up, didn't you?
I usually just make stuff up.
Okay.
You're the one who knows things. I just, you know.
You give yourself far too little credit.
Okay, we have today Greg in Jamestown, California. Hello, Jamestown! I was just missing you the other day with your lovely green grass and green trees, and even this time of year you're still green, whereas out here in Utah everything is slushy brown.
We should probably repeat that you grew up about 20 minutes away from Jamestown.
Yes, and it's so pretty.
It is.
Okay, sorry. I'll get off my little nostalgia box. Okay. We also have Tony in New York, and I can say hi to New York, too, but I've never been there, so I can't reminisce about you, but I'm sure you're wonderful, too.
Okay. I'm sure
and
it is.
Matt in Perth, which would be a lovely place to go. I've never been to Australia either, but it's totally on my list of places that I want to go.
Mine too.
Okay. And Ryan in Arizona, which I think we've only driven through a corner of, and it was very deserty.
Yes, but it's a lot nicer right now than it is here.
But it was also the spot of the host, so that makes it cool. That, you know, that book by Stephanie, that was a good book. Okay. Is it going to be one of those episodes?
I don't know.
And Jonas in Sweden. I've never been to Sweden either, but I totally want to go to Sweden because my great-grandmother was from Sweden.
It's true.
And it seems really cool. Okay.
Okay.
So, only one of those places have I ever been to, but I'm sure they're all fabulous.
I'm sure they are.
Yes. Okay. Now we'll talk about fish.
And this is Tony right here.
Yes. Oh, they're out of order again.
I'm sorry. I thought I fixed it.
You're so naughty.
I'm sorry.
It's okay. I'll forgive you.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. We're going to do Tony first from New York. Lovely New York. He says, on recent shows, mycobacteriosis has been coming up again. I wanted to let you have the link to a fact sheet, VM96, and Russ has informed me that VM stands for veterinary medicine.
I'm guessing that's what it is.
Well, your guesses are usually pretty good. Published by the University of Florida, one of a series from the veterinary medicine, Large Animal Clinical Sciences Department. The document really goes in depth, and I thought it would make some very informative reading for anyone interested.
It is a good document.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good overview of mycobacteria.
It's a pretty long link, but he also sent the PDF document itself, so we can get it up one of those two ways, or possibly both.
Yep, it will at least the link will be up there, and I can always shorten the visible link and just people click on it, and it will redirect
to
that.
Look at you, Mr. Tech Genius. That's a great idea.
It doesn't actually take that much to do that.
Oh!
It's pretty easy.
No, it's brilliant. You're full of ideas. Okay. Enjoying good health. Yeah, we're trying to work on that. It's not working too well, which is probably why I'm a little loopy. Although I'm not on cold medicine, but I think my cold has turned into a sinus infection. So I'm just, you know, you mix sinus infection with, like, performing personality, and it gets a little weird, I guess. Okay. So, who do we have next?
That's still Tony.
Oh, right, still Tony. Okay, yep. No wonder there was not another name. That makes so much more sense.
Yep, and okay. I didn't put a little line there either.
Okay. He says he got his invitation from Matt in Australia, and he's totally on for February 8th. Yay!
Cool. So it's coming along. I think mm-hmm. February 8th is looking like it's working for people, so mm-hmm. that's good.
And, oh, I just had an idea.
What?
I don't know if it's a good idea, but it's an idea.
Okay.
I don't know. It's almost Valentine's Day on February 8th. Are there, like, spawning questions people have? Or, I don't know, romantic fishy inquiries? I don't know. That would be an interesting topic. People always like to breed fish. Okay. Sorry.
That's okay.
Tony says, Dr. Bob, thanks for commenting on fish for colder tanks. The resources you pointed out are really going to help me. Russ, I liked your ideas very much too, especially the paradise fish. Mick, congratulations too on the little axes. Incredible. He says, Russ, my interest was piqued when you said that in the killifish fry tank, Java moss should definitely be hanging from above or otherwise free-floating, since nerites of the larger size might otherwise climb into the Java moss. I thought that was interesting since I'd never seen that before. Then minutes later, I looked into my aquarium and saw, you guessed it, my zebra nerite sliding around atop a clump of Java moss. There you have it. Signed, Aqualad, superhero in training.
Well, you know, this you never know what's going to happen until it does.
Yes, especially when you give me the microphone.
Yeah, well, that's true. You don't give me a script.
You take what you get, my friends.
Okay. This is an interesting thing. He mentioned axes, too. And axolotls are good for cool water tanks. They're not fish, but they are aquatic.
They're very cute.
And
I really like them. We should have them sometime.
I would love to. We just
There's
have to have
my official request for the future. How about okay. that?
They're really cool. We just have to have a really mm-hmm. cool water tank. I mean, I was going to ask...
Let's just have a pond outside.
I'm going to ask Mick, because his are obviously doing very well, what temperature he keeps his at. Because the stuff that I've read says that you really ought to keep them quite cool, like in the 60s or below.
Oh.
And that would be tricky in our house. But
well, it would be tricky in Utah in the summer.
In the summer. In the winter,
you'd have to have
I mean,
a chiller.
Yeah, you would. Unless you have a really cool basement or something. But
yeah.
I think Mick's facility is larger. I mean, is warmer than that. And he seemed to be doing fine. So
mm-hmm. Well, and he's got them in the house right now.
Yeah, he's got some in the house. And I don't know what temperature his house is at right now. But Mick, what's your temperature range on your axes? Because obviously yours are thriving. Having little babies and whatnot, so...
Did he used to have them in a pond, or did he just have them in his
I know
little
he had some of them in
room
a pond,
that he
least.
Had all his tanks in.
It seems... Now I don't remember if he had some in the fish room or not. I think he did, but I know he had some in the pond, and he's got some indoors, as you mentioned. But it seems like he had some in the fish room, too.
Okay.
Guess what? We got a paradise fish.
We did, and some gold barbs.
Some gold barbs.
Mm-hmm.
And
when we were trying to do Odessa barbs, but it was proving a little bit...
Difficult and costly?
Out here, yes. So we went for a paradise fish and some gold barbs instead, so now our tank is not so lonely.
It looks really nice, doesn't
mm-hmm.
it?
It does. And he's having fun chasing the gold barbs around, and they're having fun chasing each other around.
Yep, they seem to be spawning quite a bit mm-hmm. in there. And they really like fruit flies, all of them.
Yes, which is good, because we've got
plenty
of those.
Fruit flies, yeah, now mm-hmm. I have... Some fish that will actually eat them at home. And so it's not just the, you know, the 30 that go to the geckos every couple days.
I
can actually
use more of them.
So it's kind of fun. And I really like paradise fish. Never had them before. This is my first time. I really like them. And I like the gold barbs, too. Hadn't done that either.
Have you taken pictures yet?
I need to. I was just kind of waiting for him to color up a wee bit more.
Okay.
I mean, he's already coloring up, but... You
well,
know.
When they're looking nice and happy, we'll take some pictures and put them up for you.
Yeah. Okay, we're just letting them go through the, you know, the quarantine period, so to speak.
Right.
Before we...
But it's been 2 weeks now.
Yeah, it has.
And everybody looks like they're doing fairly well.
Mm-hmm. So.
Okay, well, we're going to continue talking about cool water tanks, because Greg in Jamestown says, I was listening to episode 191, and the person asking about fish... like cooler waters. I got the 2008 Aquarium USA magazine. It has an article about unheated tanks. Hope this gives them a starting point to find some fish. Here's the list they have. Excuse me. And they have a nice long list here.
Yeah.
It says white cloud, mountain minnows, which we brought up, paradise fish, which we just talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Did you bring that up on the other one too?
Yes.
Okay.
But not all of these.
Okay. Buenos Aires tetra, bloodfin tetra, C. barbatus. He says he's not sure about what the common name is, but he says a Brazilian mountain stream or long nose Corydoras.
Yep. So probably Corydoras barbatus.
Oh, that's what this is.
Yeah.
Does it look like it has a beard or something? Barbatus?
Well, it has whiskers.
Oh, okay. Astrolebius bilotti. I don't know what that is. Do you know what that
it's
is?
It's a kind of a killifish.
Oh, that's on the next line. Even on the next line, I thought I went with that. Okay. Australebius nigri pinis.
Mm-hmm. It's got black fins.
I see. Okay, and that's another killifish?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. American flag fish.
Aphysimian striatum.
Oh, whoops. Sorry, is that also another killifish?
Yep, okay. It is.
Who were we just talking about last time that had flagfish? Was that,
that was Dr. Bob
or was that
the other?
Let's
see, I believe that was Dr. Bob on the North Shore, yeah.
Okay. Blind cave tetras, which you love.
I totally do,
and
but you totally don't.
I totally hate because they're so ugly. They're just like, they're like maggots.
Oh, no.
They're like, I don't know, they have no color and they have no eyes and they're just like these little pink, pale, squirmy things. And
they're more like white to me.
I know, but you're colorblind.
Oh, they look nice to me.
Well, you can love them.
Okay, this is what I'm going to do. Someday in my office, I'm going to have a tank that's set up to look like a cave.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be illuminated with a black light.
Maybe then they'll be purple.
And there'll be like a whole school of them in there. And then you won't have to worry about it because you'll only see them when you come to my office, which isn't that often.
Okay.
But I'll see them every day I'm in my office.
Okay, that's a brilliant idea.
There you go.
Gwenny really likes them too.
She does. I think all of our kids like them.
I'm just biased, I guess. I'm blind cave prejudiced.
Oh.
That's okay. And pygmy sunfish. Which we have a couple listeners who have sunfish too, yes?
We do, but I don't think they have pygmy.
Read
the scientific name.
Pumpkin seed sunfish, is that what they have? Elasoma Everglade. They're from the Everglades?
Or Everglade. Something.
Are they from the Everglades?
I think they are. That's kind of what that means. Of the Everglades. Yeah. So, thank you, Greg. That is a good list.
Yeah, that's a good list.
It is indeed.
And say hello to the lovely oak trees in Jamestown for me.
You know, I really like bloodfin tetras, but I don't know if you would.
Have I seen those?
I don't know.
That name sounds familiar.
They have red fins.
I figured.
And a light body. Maybe you'd like them. I don't know.
I don't know.
I have to show you.
I'd have to see them. They ought to make them with red fins and a black body.
Oh, there you go.
And then they would be all spiffy.
Okay.
They'd be all dressed up to go out fancy. Okay. Matt in Perth. He says, here's one for the next audio podcast. Is that what we're doing on the 8th? Is that what this is for?
This is an audio podcast right now, remember?
Well, yeah, but I was just wondering why he specified that
because
I didn't know
it came in an email that was connected to stuff that's going to the Hangout, too.
Okay, so this is for the podcast,
right.
So I'm not reading some I'm not
nope.
supposed to. He says, my new pond loses a bucket a day. I've checked the filter, and it is not leaking. When the filter's off, there is no water loss. Question, is it possible to lose a bucket a day from my fountain and small waterfall from evaporation alone? It's 100 centimeters by 60 centimeters, roughly, in surface area. I think I've asked something similar before, and he put a picture up. Well, it's winter here right now. Isn't it summer in Australia?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it quite warm in Australia?
Well, it depends on which part you're in, but there are plenty of parts of Australia that are quite warm. Yeah.
So, if he's got a waterfall going, is it possible, if temperatures are high, that he could be losing that much to evaporation a day?
It makes sense to me that he could be losing it to a combination of evaporation and splashing.
Oh, splashing!
Mm-hmm. There'll be some of that mm-hmm. will speed things up a bit.
Bless us and splash us, precious.
So I'm guessing that he is essentially losing it from water that is both evaporating and just kind of being splashed
mm-hmm.
out. I did look at his picture and it kind of helped. And I asked him for a clarification on something before I had seen the picture because I read it on the bus when I couldn't download the picture because I didn't have Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
And I sent him an email, which I can do. It just sends later. And then he got back to me and said, yes, and take a look at the picture and you can see how these are all connected. So all of his waterfall is connected to the filter and everything is together. And looking at it, I'm just sort of estimating, but I think it can be.
Okay.
You can lose a lot of water from that.
What, Matt, just out of curiosity, what is the weather like in Perth right now?
You know, once he told us how warm it got in Perth, it gets pretty warm.
Gets pretty warm,
yeah,
huh?
It does. So.
Okay. Jonas in Sweden. He says, a year or two ago, I contacted you and asked about tips for breeding black goldfish. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some black moors, but did not use them for breeding. The funny thing is that I got two almost completely black fish in the pond last year, and one half black, half yellow from this year's fry.
Okay, well, I think that's very cool, and hopefully something comes of that. Of course, it can take a few years for a black goldfish to lose its black color and turn some other crazy color.
Mm-hmm. He didn't say if they're moors? That he's got now in his pond? Or
I think he's implying that the fish he's talking about were not descended from the moors he purchased.
Okay.
So they're probably singletails. But this is a cool thing that I've found out.
Well, couldn't they hybridize, though? Like, could they have contributed some genes without being documented if they're out in a pond altogether?
Well, I think what he's saying is that they did not have the opportunity to breed together.
So the moors weren't in the pond.
Right.
Okay.
That's what I'm understanding.
Okay.
And this is a kind of a cool thing. Since we last talked to Jonas, I have found something out. Do you remember? I think last time we sent him a video, or we referred him to a video of a black single-tailed goldfish that mm-hmm. was velvety black,
mm-hmm.
beautiful-looking goldfish, single-tailed with a thin body, but as dark mm-hmm. and as velvety as any high-quality black moor. Sent in that picture. Since then, I have found that many times when you get a black goldfish with that particular appearance, one that is more or less permanent, mm-hmm. not a temporary, you know, young one that's going to change color later, it is often a coimet.
What's a coimet?
A coimet is a hybrid between a goldfish and a koi.
Where does the met part come from?
From comet. Koi and comet. It's spelled K-O-I-M-E-T.
Oh.
Apparently, it's not that uncommon when you keep goldfish and koi together, and they're often, I guess not all the time, but mm-hmm. often black, that velvety black color.
Mm-hmm.
And beautiful fish, but it's a problem. It's a hybrid. You know, that can be an issue.
Are they sterile?
I'm not certain whether or not they are sterile. That's a good question. But I know they're, well, at least I've read that they're illegal in some places because you're not supposed to sell hybrids.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's not a good idea to mix hybrids into things that aren't hybrids.
Right.
So that can cause problems.
So is this an issue that people should maybe not be keeping goldfish and koi together in their ponds anymore?
Well, that's one of the potential issues from doing it. And if you want those nice koimet looking goldfish, it's something you could try. Mm-hmm. But the thing is, You can't sell them as goldfish because they are no longer goldfish.
You can't sell them as koi
because they're no longer koi. There's something in between. So
can you sell them as koimets?
I don't know. I guess it depends because, like as I said, in some places they're illegal.
Laws. Interesting.
Mm-hmm. But if you Google black koimet, K-O-I-M-E-T, get some nice looking fish. So it's worth a look anyway.
Interesting.
Just for fun.
I don't know. Hybridization, that's a tricky business because you're trying to get a certain look. I don't know. Look how many different dogs we have. And
right.
They're from different stocks.
They're different stocks, but
you know.
And arguably dogs are probably descended from more than one species, too.
Well, that's what I mean, yeah.
Yeah, but
they're just grandfathered in because people like dogs.
Well, it's already happened. It happened a long time ago, you know what I mean?
But people still do it.
They cross them with bulls.
I meant like even just the different breed types.
Right, but they're the same species.
You get cockapoos.
Yeah, but those are the same species of dog though, essentially. I mean, if you go back, the domestic angelfish are probably mm-hmm. descended from three species of mm-hmm. angelfish. And as we've mentioned recently, live bearers, swordtail, if you go buy a swordtail in the pet store, it's not just a swordtail, it has plenty of blood in it, and vice versa. And many of the mollies mm-hmm. are the same way, and so on. There are endless live bearers out there with guppy blood in them, and all kinds of things going on. So, it diminishes the integrity of certain wild populations. You know, it's really bad with a lot of the cichlids from specific localities in, like, the Rift Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
It can be an issue because you want to maintain the integrity of in particular color morphs that exist in nature, things like that. You know, there are a lot of potential ramifications there. So let's go on.
He says, now I have a problem with my plants. For a couple of months, my plants have been rotting from the root. The things that I have changed since they were healthy is that I changed the filter, got a lot of adult apple snails, or Pomacea diffusa, and some Malaysian sand snail. I have replaced the lighting and have never fertilized my plants. The roots seem to be eaten by something. They turn into thin white strings. The leaves look healthy on most of the plants except for the anubias, and they have stopped growing. Every day there are leaves floating in the aquarium.
Hmm. Well?
Would apple snails eat the plants?
Apple snails, the name apple snails, can refer to a number of species, some of which are voracious plant eaters. The particular species that he cited there, the Pomacea diffusa, to my understanding, are not really plant eaters. They'll eat dead and decaying, dying plant matter, that kind
of
thing.
But not so much the live
ones. Not so much the live plants. However, they will dig. And if you have a lot of them, and he does say he has a lot of them, right? Yes, he does.
He says he got a lot. Yeah.
There's a lot of them. Conceivably, they could be digging in the substrate enough to disturb the root systems of the plants.
Oh.
And mess them up. That's possible, because they do dig.
What about the Malaysian sand snails? Would they have any kind of effect?
They're typically considered beneficial in planted aquaria.
Okay. What do they do?
They do sort of what earthworms do in soil.
Oh, okay.
They dig around in there and
aerate it
a little bit, but not too much. I mean, you want some anoxic activity going on in parts of your substrate when you're growing plants, because the availability of minerals is changed in that sort of environment. Changes the pH and, you know, certain things become more available to the roots. But they're generally regarded as beneficial, so I don't think that would be an issue unless you had tons of them. I mean, if they were getting a lot of food and there were huge populations of them, that might possibly cause a problem. But other than that, I don't think it would be. But it could be the snails are digging things up. And it's just weakening the root systems because they're getting jiggled around a lot. It's possible. It's strange that even the anubias have stopped growing. I wonder about that. The fact that there are leaves floating around kind of gives me the idea that the snails are probably jostling the plants. They've even been known to kind of crush plants that they're not eating.
They're kind of ripping the leaves off, kind of just by shaking them around?
You know, crawling all over everything. Oh, okay. Stuff. It's possible.
So should he take those out?
I don't know. It's worth a thought. If you have another tank, you can put them in and
see
how the
plants
fare after they've been alone for a few weeks. That might be worth trying.
Mm-hmm.
I do like those. I've had that species before. It's kind of fun snails. And they didn't cause any damage, as I recall, to my plants. So,
okay.
But I only had one or two at a time, so that may have something to do with it.
Alrighty. We have another one from Tony.
Mm-hmm. Oh, indeed. We have two.
He's enjoying a heat wave in New York today. 48 degrees. That's 70 degrees warmer than last week if you factor in the wind chill.
My goodness.
We're all outside in our tank tops and running shorts and having a grand old time. Well, you know what's really interesting? Not that this had anything to do with anything, but when do I ever? January in Utah is usually frigid, freeze your nostrils together cold. And this year, December was like that, and January hasn't been that bad. It was 53 degrees outside the other day. Mm-hmm. I cannot remember a January in Utah where it got up to 53 degrees.
Me neither.
It's so kind of odd.
We're kind of in the same boat with Tony.
Mm-hmm. He says, meanwhile, hundreds of miles below the ocean floor, deep in the Aquarilab, the zebra nerite hatching project continues. Bum, bum, bum.
Yeah, maybe we need a maniacal laugh, too.
How's that?
That's
pretty good. You have a pretty good maniacal laugh, too. You should show them.
Right now?
Why not?
Okay.
See, that's pretty good. You could be an evil villain if you wanted to.
Who's to say that I'm not?
Well, okay, so no nerites yet. Are they microscopic? So I decided to make the 1 gallon a little more interesting by adding sea monkeys. Yay, sea monkeys! I realized that brine shrimp love the marine environment and also feed upon the same sorts of suspended foods. I also have read online that the sea monkey packets probably contain blue-green algae that grows as a food source. I think I'll have some science happening in the tank in no time.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Oh, I think sea monkeys are a lot of fun.
Sea monkeys are awesome.
Now, let's see. Are nerites microscopic? I think the villagers are almost microscopic, if I remember correctly. I put them under a low-powered microscope and could see them very easily, but it seems to me that I could also see them when I wasn't using the microscope, but they were very small, like looking at rotifers. They were just really, really
teeny
small.
Teeny, wee, tiny.
Yeah. So you could almost not see them. And okay. I do have pretty good eyes.
You do.
So.
I don't.
I don't know that everybody could see. I didn't think Kelly could see them.
No. Okay. Says, additionally, Russ, what you said about suspended food particles really got me thinking. Maybe I can feed Hikari first bites as well to the growing snails. This food does a lovely job of staying in suspension. I'll see if that works out. I don't have a fridge near to this tank that I can use, otherwise I'd go with the phytoplankton that you suggested. True, true, I don't know if this food will work as well, but I suspect the villager beggars can't be choosers.
I love that phrase. It's pretty fun.
First bites do contain seaweed and spirulina, plus the teeny snailings will be getting an extra shot of protein in every bite.
Well, might as well try it. Certain, you know, creatures like this have some pretty specific dietary requirements, but, hey, you find out new things by trying them, right?
Indeed, indeed. He said it should be at least 5 days before I see any sea monkeys, so I will report back then. If the sea monkeys hatch, do you think it will encourage the nerites to hatch as well?
You never know. I mean, I don't know if it's going to have a direct effect, but if the environment will support sea monkeys, it seems like the sorts of things suspended in the water it would have a better chance of supporting the villagers than if it wouldn't support sea monkeys, although they might become competition, actually.
Does he mean, like, them hatching, will that release chemicals or hormones or pheromones or something into the water saying, I'm hatching, you should hatch too?
I don't know, that sometimes works with fish.
Jump on in, the water's fine.
Sometimes if you spawn fish in one tank and then you take some other fish in and put them in that same water, even it will encourage them to spawn. That does happen sometimes. So I don't know if that would connection or not, but it's just made me think of that. But it is possible that they will actually compete directly for food. I don't know. I'll be interested to see what happens.
Yeah.
Because you remember when we kept the Opaiula and we put the brine shrimp eggs in and they hatched and grew up and lived in there for a while?
Uh-huh.
Did that a couple times.
Yeah.
It seemed like I did that once when we had villagers. I don't remember I can't remember what happened. But anyway, we never did get any villagers to settle into the adult shape.
Grow up into big snails?
Yeah, we didn't. One thing to think about, too, particle size, these villagers are so small that the first bites might actually be too big. But then, this is a funny thing. We had this feather duster worm years ago, and we've talked about him. We've actually podcasted about him.
Mm-hmm. Did we ever put up the funny little video about Dave?
Yes, we did.
Okay, good.
Yeah, it's up there. And his name was Dave. It's named after our biologist friend Dave,
because that's where we got him from.
Yes, he was doing his dissertation
on feather
doctoral
dusters.
Dissertation on breeding feather dusters, captive breeding them. And anyway, Dave, the feather duster, not the doctor, not the biologist,
not Dr. Dave.
No, we fed him spirulina mostly, and he did fine and lived on it for years. And Dr. Dave was asking us, you know, what does it eat and stuff, and we're finding out that in captive situations they don't usually live longer than 3 to 6 months a lot of the time. And
we had him for a few years,
though. We had him like 3 years.
Yeah.
And so he was pretty amazed that that's what we were feeding him and it was working, and that's why we kept doing it, because it was working, obviously. And so there you go.
So it's kind of cool.
And you never know. He was very surprised that it was working, but it was. So.
That's how you learn stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and Tony sent us another thing. It's kind of a funny video link to YouTube.
It is.
About the triops that ate Manhattan.
Yeah. Go ahead and read that.
He says, apparently, it is possible to make your triops grow gigantic using radioactivity. Do you think this is real? I wondered if someone out in Aquarimax land is willing to try it and report back. It should be someone with a massively huge tank, I would think. It might be fake, but I want to believe.
It is a fun video.
It's pretty cool. They did it really well.
Yes, it is. It is a doctored video, mm-hmm. but it's kind of fun. And the first clue that it's a doctored video is that it says that Triops in the Triassic were much larger than they are now in the beginning, in the little blurb. Actually, they weren't really much different in size than they are now. The Triops that existed back then were actually not the same species that is depicted in the video, which is looks like Triops longicaudatus to me, which is a widespread species in the United States. But it's the unchanged species is a Triops conchriformis, which is common in Europe and other places, but they're considerably larger than the U.S. species, and they do better at cooler temperatures, too.
Interesting.
You can sometimes find them in the wild about 4.5 centimeters long, the carapace.
Just the carapace?
I believe so, if I'm not wrong. And there are some species that get pretty
centimeters?
Big. Yeah, you know, the carapace is big, and then it's got the tail, the telson.
But centimeters were like teeny wee.
This is 4.5 centimeters, just about right there.
Really?
Yeah, that's about how big
it is. You can't see him gesturing.
No, you can't. But anyway, they get pretty big, and there are a couple of other species that get big. I think Grenarius, which there's some debate whether that's actually a species or not, but anyway, that's supposed to get pretty big. But not as big as the ones in the video, because it's been doctored. But it's pretty fun. It's just fun to watch it anyway.
Yeah, so we'll put the links up. Mm-hmm. Plus, apparently, you can create your own radioactivity just with boiling banana peels.
And some neodymium magnets and a few other things.
That's
you know,
pretty
bananas
awesome.
Are radioactive anyway. That's why they're using a banana.
Should we do the quote?
Which one?
About how to create plutonium from common household items. That's a great Weird Al quote.
I guess you just kind of did it.
Today, we're going to learn how to create plutonium from common household items.
Welcome to Secrets of the Universe.
What is his ingredient list again? Laura Lynn knows this. She says this one all the time.
I don't know. But Laura
Something
knows.
About a bowl of strawberry jello.
Yes, I think that's included there. But anyway, it's a fun video with the Triops. You should check it out. It's the first, maybe half of the video is actually authentic, showing the mm-hmm. Triops growing up. And they really are amazing how fast they grow. If you've never grown Triops, it's worth it.
It's pretty
fun.
Cool.
I want to try getting the conchriformis species sometime.
Plus, didn't Tony want a t-shirt sometime with the Ben-Hur Triops?
Triops and Chariots?
Triops and Chariots.
See, it's
we
coming
need to
back
do the t-shirts still. Circle. We're so bad we haven't done it
You know,
yet.
Tony joined Aquarimax talking about Triops.
He did, you're
so
right.
So he's coming back to
it's
Triops.
True.
It's interesting.
It's all kismatic.
Got to get some. We should send him some eggs.
Do we still have
Oh, yeah.
Them? Where?
Got all kinds of them at work.
Oh,
I've
okay.
got this big thing full of them. I'm never going to use them all because every time I've hatched Triops, they lay hundreds of eggs and I just
what do you
dry
do
the
with
sand.
Them? Yeah.
You know? So.
That's a good idea.
Got plenty of them.
Well, I think that's everything for this
I think
week.
It is. So just remember that February 8th is the hangout. And
you can send Matt your email address, right? And he'll send you the invite.
Well,
is that
they'd have to
works?
Send it to us, but I think
or send it to
just
us
about
and we
got
send
enough
it to
people.
Matt?
I think so.
Okay.
Several people have joined in, so
okay.
they're interested in joining. All right. But we're looking forward to that, and we're going to try to do some other interviews in the near future. So let's see. I think that's all.
May the fish
be with you. Wow, I totally messed that one up.
You want to try it again?
Yes.
Okay, you want to go first or second?
You do one word and I do one word.
Okay,
like
may
the
fish
be
with
you.